Welcome to the ABCA's podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Brownlee. New ABCA podcast sponsor Driveline are longtime friends, and I've used many of their products when I was coaching in the youth camps now. If you want to truly optimize your pitcher's workload, Pulse from Driveline Baseball takes simple pitch counts to the next level. Pulse is a wearable sensor that precisely measures every throw your pitchers make on a daily basis. Pulse tracks both throw count and throw intensity. Trusted by MLB organizations like the Cincinnati Reds, elite college programs, and individual athletes at all levels, Pulse is changing the way throwing workload is managed. With the Pulse Team dashboard, you'll be able to make data-driven usage decisions to optimize training and injury prevention for your entire team. Visit drivelinebaseball.com/pulse to revolutionize your pitching staff's development and health today. This episode is sponsored by Netting Pros. Netting professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Netting Professionals specializes in the design, fabrication, and installation of custom netting for backstops, batting cages, dugouts, BP screens, and ball carts. They also design and install digital graphic wall padding, windscreen, turf, turf protectors, dugout benches, dugout cubbies, and more. Netting Professionals is an official partner of the ABCA and continues to provide quality products and services to many high school, college, and professional fields, facilities, and stadiums throughout the country. Netting Professionals are improving programs one facility at a time. Contact them today at 844-620-2707 or info@nettingpros.com. Visit them online at www.nettingpros.com or check out Netting Pros on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn for all their latest products and projects. Make sure to let CEO Will Miner know that the ABCA sent you. Now on to the podcast. Next up on the ABCA podcast is ABCA A-Tech Division II Coach of the Year, Joe Urso. Urso is one of the most successful coaches at any level of college baseball, leading Tampa to 6 national championships in 22 seasons as head coach. Urso eclipsed the 1,000-win mark this spring. The Spartans are the winningest program of any NCAA team in the 2000s. UT's all-time winningest coach, Urso has led the Spartans to 40-plus victories in 16 of his 22 seasons at the helm. Urso was a former Spartan All-American and played and coached professionally for the Los Angeles Angels. Urso is a 2006 inductee to the University of Tampa Athletics Hall of Fame after NCAA career records for runs, school mark for runs in a season, and still holds school records for walks in a season and career. On a side note, Coach Urso is one of the more likable people we have in the baseball industry. Let's welcome Joe Urso to the podcast. Here with Joe Urso, University of Tampa Division II National Champs and ABCA A-Tech Division Coach of the Year, but 6 World Series championships, all-time winningest coach at Tampa with over 1,000 wins. So, Joe, thanks for jumping on with me.
Thank you, Ryan.
Hey, do you think you guys win back-to-back national championships if COVID didn't hit in 20?
It was another really good team. We were starting to make a run there. That would have been nice to find out.
I mean, when did you realize that, okay, this is going to be it for this season?
We started hearing of other people around the country that were not going to be traveling. So kind of had a feeling that, it was going to hit us all. Didn't know it was going to be a whole cancellation like that instead of just a weekend. But, yeah, it's one of the toughest things we've gone through, and we still have players because of it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that too. So are you on the tail end of that? Because you guys have different – you've had some different rules with getting years back with some of the JC guys, correct?
Yeah, and that's going to really benefit Division II baseball this year. I think you're going to see, the talent level really elevated. Guys that have been the SEC, ACC entering our league is going to be fun to see.
Did you get any bounce backs?
We did. We have we got 12 Division I guys coming in. So with the transfer portal, the way things were happening, we had really kind of got out of the transfer business because most of them were going Division I to Division I. But with this 2021 JUCO rule, We exploited it, and we're excited to see this group on the field.
With the run that you've had, how gratifying is this for you as an alum?
The having these kids back or the championship?
Just you, the run that you've had since you've been there.
The run, I mean, it means everything to me. You know, as a graduate and being part of the first, you know, championship in 1992 as a player, you know, playing a little pro ball after that and coming back. This is what, you know, I envisioned. This is what it was all about, is, you know, keeping this program on top. And obviously, you know, we've been very fortunate to elevate it in many ways.
Does it make it easier for you to recruit there because you played there, you've been there forever? Obviously, the success that you all have had. I know recruiting is never easy, but you can talk it because you were actually a player there.
Yeah, and it makes it easy. My whole staff, you know, played here, graduated from here. Sam Militello's been with me, you know, going on 25 years every year with me. Jose Jimenez, who played 4 years with us, you know, has been coaching with us, going on his 10th year. So the players look at us. They know that we know what it takes to win in a Tampa uniform at this level, and makes our job a lot easier, a lot more credibility, you know, to our players of what we're about each day.
Is that by design, keeping Tampa guys kind of keeping it in the family?
I think so. You know, hasn't been a ton of coaching changes here, but the ones that have come in, you know, they seem to hire, you know, former players that know, you know, what the tradition's all about.
Who was the head coach at Tampa when you were there?
When I played, it was Lelo Prado, and then he left to Louisville, and then Terry Rupp took over. And then he left to Maryland, and that's when I got the job.
Shout out to Lalo. He was at Louisville when I was at Evansville. So good human being. I love Lalo.
He's awesome.
I have to ask you, the mayor of Lake Elsinore?
Yes. it was a really special place for me, really where kind of my career took a turn for the best. Was playing minor league ball, and we moved into a new city. So the fans were everywhere. You know, it was in the honeymoon stages, 5,000 plus fans. Matt Devlin, who was the radio announcer, he's now the play-by-play for the Toronto Raptors. He really just did a great job promoting me in the community while he was there in Lake Elsinore and just pushing my name out there over and over again. And then the next radio announcer comes in, Sean McCall, and became one of my best friends. And he kept pushing me through the community. And the next thing you know, it was the mayor. They were doing lots of special things for me, even retiring my number. So that was a great, great part of my life.
I mean, that's got to make it a little easier as a player, doesn't it? Just with the amount of support. Kids, players don't always get that. So it's got to mean a lot getting that type of support.
Oh, we had it all in Lake Elsinore. You know, it was, like I said, honeymoon stages. So, you know, players, not only now they get housing, but, you know, we were getting housing. That was a first for us. You know, one of the businessmen in town had given me a car to drive around while I was there. We had free Blockbuster, which was big time back then, to have the movies, a free movie theater to go to each night if you wanted after games. We had a lot of perks. The city just rallied around us.
When did the Angels approach you about maybe coaching?
So it was actually me. You know, I was in AA, and I just saw the way the business was working. After a month, the roster gets dropped by a couple, and that's when I saw that it could be my name next. I went over to Ken Forsh, who was running the minor leagues at the time. He was in Midland, Texas, while I was there, and just said, "Look, I know, you know, the numbers may get me here, and most people would be released, not go back to A-ball for the fourth and fifth year, but you know, I'd love to go back." At that time, Aaron Guile and Keith Luoloa were playing up the middle, two prospects at the time. Guile actually made it to the big leagues, and I told Ken I would love to go down, kind of be a player coach, and start to work my way hopefully to the big leagues as a coach one day. And that's what he did for me. You know, a week later, sent me down instead of releasing me, was a great move for me to start this career.
At what point were you like, "I'm probably not going to make it to the big leagues"?
You know, you really never want to accept it. But you know, when you get to Double A and you're playing, you know, twice a week, you know, I still believed in my talent, but it was just a matter of, you know, I had always said, you know, my first goal is to make it to the big leagues. If not, I hope to get to know the right people to help me get into coaching. And so it all worked out for me. And but it was in Double A when I saw, you know, not playing every day. Okay, maybe I'm not as good as I think. It's time to move on to the next career.
What were some things that opened your eyes about coaching that maybe you didn't think about as a player?
You know, it's there are so many different styles and different ways that you have to be able to treat 30 different guys. So that's the toughest part of the job is, you know, you can't just go one way. You know, one kid may respond to you, you know, to you being tough on them. Another kid may need the pat on the butt. So that's you know, and that's still the challenge each year with all these kids is, you know, you get these new personalities that finding how am I going to get the most out of each individual? It can't just be my way.
So was it always in the back of your mind that you're going to maybe try to get into college, or were you going to try to stay in professional baseball coaching wise?
No, I wanted to stay in professional baseball and, you know, I'd hope to make it, you know, work my way up to the big leagues that way. And just the more I was in the coaching and you know, I coached 2 years and they turned me into a manager at a young age. So then I'm managing 2 years, you know, same thing, things are looking good. You know, I'm around, Joe Maddon a little bit to learning a lot through him. That was awesome. But just, you know, we were about to have our first, child and just knowing I didn't have a big league name as a player back then, it was all about that. And if you didn't have that, you were going to put 20 plus years in the minors. Even Joe Maddon had to do that before finally getting his opportunity. And just looked at the wife at the time and just like, maybe this is a good time to go for this college job, more family oriented, be home more instead of traveling. We were living, had a house in California, but living 3 months in Arizona, 3 months in Montana, and then the other six at the home in California where we were living at the time. So it was a lot of different places to live. So I thought this was going to be the better family job. And man, I could not have been more right.
Joe Maddon kind of broke the barrier for everybody. He was kind of brought that in. Like, I don't think anybody gives him enough credit. Like, I think he kind of brought that whole in that you don't have to have played in the big leagues to be a good manager, to be a good coach. I think he kind of broke the mold for everybody to give more people opportunities that maybe didn't play in the big leagues.
For sure. And even when, before he made it as a manager, as a bench coach, he took being a bench coach to another level, with the different charts and the things he was doing as a bench coach. I think, all bench coaches today can look at him, for help in that position.
His video with Ken Reviso was one of the first things I would show our players. When we would get into our classroom sessions, was he talking a lot about the mental game back then too?
Yes. And Ken Reviso was a big part of our, Angels, program for a long time, part of our organization, with the minor leaguers and the big leaguers. So I was around Ken a lot and appreciated him, as much as Joe did. Obviously Joe, you know, took him to the big leagues with him and kept everything going, but what a special man. And he made a difference in a lot of people with how he did, you know, sports psychology.
Being a manager at a young age, did you have to release players?
I did. You know, probably the toughest part of the job. No one wants to end someone's dream, but you know, it is part of the job as a manager to move on as the rosters, you know, go through changes each draft with the new players that are coming in. So had to do that. Too many times.
Is there much of a difference coaching on the pro side and then coaching collegiately?
Yeah, I mean the on-field stuff is all the same, but you know, college, there's just, you know, I'm the one that has to go out with my staff and find the right players that are going to be a fit for how we want to coach, also find the right student athletes so they're going to fit into, you know, the University of Tampa academically as well. So a lot more goes into it where you wear a lot more hats as a college coach. You know, I'm the travel secretary. I'm, you know, I'm calling the bus companies, the hotels, the airlines when we fly. So there's a lot more hats you wear where in the minors, it was nice. I'd get my roster given to me. Jeff Parker ended up taking over for Ken Forsh, and Jeff Parker hands me my my roster, and I'm going to make the best of it. Obviously, you know, there was rules that went along with that on how to treat prospects and how many days a week they needed to play. So there was a little bit more dictated to you on how they wanted you to manage, even as far as, you know, a kid trying to get him enough stolen base attempts as we try to get his, you know, his reps in and his development for base stealing, things like that. So a little bit more on the development side there. And over here, it's a lot more about winning. So definitely different.
You know, for you, you had a busy summer recruiting wise. Have you been able to enjoy the national championship at all? Or was it, you got to get right back into it to try to fill out the roster?
So this was very busy. It started in the World Series. So I'm in the World Series and I'm throwing batting practice. I come off to my phone being blown up by my prospects who have just found out that they have another year of eligibility, only Division II. So here I am, I'm focusing on my guys, but yet it's like, I can't miss this call. So you're making calls like, yes, I'm interested and I will get right on this right when this World Series is over. So it started right there in the World Series. And, you know, right when it was over, the celebration, I definitely made sure we had a lot of fun all summer with the coaches. But it was very busy and trying to figure out which of these transfers, because they're all so talented, which ones are going to be fit, you know, for our needs. But we've had a lot of fun this summer.
How do you sift through that as far as your needs, but also making sure the player's the right fit for Tampa?
Yeah, well, you know, our eye for recruiting and talent, we feel is very good, and synergy really helped us a lot. We're able to go on, see every one of these Division I guys during their successful time, during their failures, whatever we needed to see to narrow our list down. Then we did some phone calls to coaches that they played against, as well as coaches they played for, to try to get a good read for their personality and make sure we're bringing, you know, obviously not just a talented kid, but a kid with a good personality that we can keep this culture going at UT that we've worked so hard for.
Has that philosophy changed over the years for you, as far as when you first got into it?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, just the recruiting philosophy alone has changed over my 24 years, and just, you know, how to attack things, you know. But you know, beginning it was a lot about getting high school kids and a few JUCO guys, and it became JUCO guys with all Division I transfers because they were only calling, you know, the D2s. They couldn't transfer D1 to D1. Then we had to transition into this one now where, you know, you're not getting many D1 transfers, so we went all JUCO with more high school to try to develop those guys, and then we get this loophole to take over. But as we're building the culture, it's all about the guys that have been in our program. They're so good at, you know, explaining to the new guys, here's how we do it at Tampa. I know you came from a great program. You came from, you know, the ACC, SEC. You came from a great program, but here's how we do it at Tampa. And it is different here. And we do preach a lot about being a family, doing more things together as a family. And, you know, by the time they buy in, they leave here, and I think it'll be one of the best years of their life.
That makes for a better experience for them, right? Because it's not that individual. That's more of a pro ball approach too, feels like, where, okay, we are a group together. We're trying to win games together, but we're gonna hang out with each other away from it too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we just started school Monday. They've already, you know, done a team dinner together to get to know each other. You know, soon here they'll be out clay shooting together. They got a golf outing they're going to do together. The list goes on and on. You know, building this environment is one of the toughest things that you have to do each year. And, you know, any championship team at any sport, any level, they all, when they're accepting that trophy, they're all talk about chemistry and what a great locker room we have. That's not easy to build. And we have to work hard to do that each year, especially with our philosophy of bringing in so many junior college players. And this year, bringing in a lot of Division I players.
With skeet shooting and golf, is that coach-led? Like, you guys should go do this? Or is that something the players kind of developed over the years?
No, it's coach led, and we'll even go with them so they can make fun of us, and we have some fun and some competitions on, you know, who can shoot the most clays. We do, you know, we did a golf outing that was fun. Some guys that had never picked up a golf club, you know, having to try something different. You know, we'll just, it's a lot of fun, you know, hanging out with the guys, and I'm fortunate enough to be, you know, just 15 minutes away from here. On a lake house that the guys love coming out and jet skiing and just having fun. And the more they're around each other, the more they get to know each other. We also like to include their girlfriends and their parents in a lot of our events. If you follow us on social media, you'll see in the World Series, and there was one night we cooked 120 filet mignons on the grill with all the parents helping out. And that's Tampa baseball. That's what it's all about. It's about, you know, creating a family each year.
You had three ABCA All-Americans, correct? EJ Cumbo, Skylar Gonzalez, and then JP Gates. By the way, great big league names, too. Those are big league names.
For sure.
You know, any other guys maybe you didn't expect, or did you expect that out of those three guys coming into the year?
You know, Cumbo is a proven guy year in, year out. He's been an All-American even at New York Tech before he came here. So you expect him to carry the offense. Skylar Gonzalez was the big surprise. You know, the year before we had brought him in after being a, you know, pitcher of the year at Polk State, and he struggled in his first year here, but did all the work over the summer possible to come back, and he led our staff. I mean, 16-0, broke Sam Militello's school record here at UT for wins in a year, in a single season, was a big surprise. And then JP Gates, we had missed on him recruiting a year prior, and he went to Valdosta State and then decided to transfer to us. So we knew we were getting a special hitter and a special pitcher. And at the end there, he became our closer and was a MVP for us for the World Series.
What were the adjustments that Skylar made in the offseason?
You know, I think it was just more of a his mentality of just being able to go out, relax in a Spartan uniform, do what he does best. Some guys come in here and, you know, they think it's about velocity, and now he's throwing through his sinker, and he's a guy that, you know, pitches, you know, 86, 89, but he just sinks it and can throw any pitch, any count. And I think it was just more about for him, more just relaxing in this environment and not making more of it than it is.
How do you have that conversation with a sinker slider guy? Because they need to be relaxed, and they just see velocity over and over and over again. How do you relay that to your sinker slider guys? Like, less is going to be more for you on this to get your ball to move.
Yeah, and that's Coach Militello's job. You know, he's done an amazing job with the pitchers. You know, year in, year out, we're in the top in the country for ERA. I think we missed the ERA title last year by .001. He did a great job with Skylar and the other guys, but, you know, it's about pitchability. It's not just about trying to throw 95 miles an hour. It's pitchability, especially in Skylar's role, of being a starter, of having to give us a quality start and be out there, you know, 6-7 innings every outing, which he was able to do for us.
Did you have any much adversity in the spring? You only lost, I think, two games in a row, maybe once or twice all year.
Yeah, this was a different one. Normally you'll have your ups and downs through a year and learn from it. We go into Houston, Minute Maid Park, to open the season against three top 10 opponents. And we win by 10 run rule, pretty much all three. And you're leaving there going, wow, you know, brought in all these new guys, didn't really know what to expect. And it's like, you know, wow, are we really this good? And as the year went on, it really was. It was that special. They really, from start to finish, were dominant. Just, you know, was happy that, you know, even though you dominate through a whole year, you know how tough playoffs can be. And you need a little bit of a break here and there to win a national championship. And just happy this group, especially for what they had achieved through the regular season and the types of personalities and how much they loved, you know, putting on that Tampa jersey. Was happy that they were able to leave there with a championship.
Well, probably maybe the only adversity was you lost the first game of the Super Regionals, Damery Riddle.
Yeah, and that was tough because we got blown out. It was a tough one. And then, you know, you got to come back the next day and win a doubleheader. But that was we were mentally, you could just, you know, you could see that they knew we had played doubleheaders all year, and they knew that we were capable of coming out for 18 innings and dominating. And that's what we did the next, that next day, winning, both of those games by large margins.
Does that help you run the table at the World Series then?
Yeah, build the momentum back up, and definitely, helped us to finish it off and carry.
Your prep you've won 6 national championships. Has your prep changed much for the World Series or to attack winning a national championship?
It's pretty similar. Once I figured what it was all about and I was able to relax, I think that helps the players relax. And, amazing staff that we have, and no one, like I said, no one's eyes are as good as this staff's, I don't believe. So when Sam and Jose's out there watching a game, and Kerry scouting our next opponent, when they come back with the notes of what we're going to do and how we're going to attack this game, no one does it better than them. And I'm very fortunate that I've had them both for this long.
Do you have much internal dialogue or self-talk to remind yourself to relax once things kind of start to get heated in game?
Yeah, because the players are going to follow, my personality.
I'm bringing that up because I think it's a good point. I had a tough time with that at times. I would get lost in the emotion of a game sometimes, and I am always fascinated by coaches that are able to keep a low pulse and that, because that was one of the things that I had to work on more than anything in game, was trying to keep a low pulse. That was difficult for me.
It is, and I learned it against Florida Southern, our rival, many years ago. When we were, second to them a lot, I would make such a big deal of that Florida Southern weekend. Like, you knew what weekend it was, and then you get there and you just don't play well, and you don't know why. And one of my assistant coaches, Scott McNulty at the time, just said, you really, this week, your whole personality changes at practice. And it's like, maybe if we take a different, more low-key approach like we do throughout the year, the players will relax. So that just learning that in a regular season, I've taken to the World Series, taken into the playoffs. We also preach, trying to play at that level instead of the ups and downs and highs and lows of the game, trying to play at an even keel level so the pressure doesn't get to us on that final day.
Have you all always had a JV program?
Yes, since I've been here. We started, I believe, in like 93 or 94 once I graduated. So it's been here, ever since I've coached.
Do you enjoy that piece of it? It adds a little more on your plate, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm fortunate. Mark Johnson's a head coach of the JV team, and he takes all the pressure off me. So we run it as 2 separate programs as far as our practices. So we can keep the numbers down. But where it benefits us is we're able to send guys up and down as much as we want. So if I have an underclassman not getting the reps behind an All-American, I can develop them that way. Or if I have a bullpen guy that didn't get the innings on a weekend because our starters dominated, now I can send them down on Monday, get the innings against a good junior college team to stay sharp for our next weekend. So there's a lot of benefits from it as well.
Does that go into then there? So say a varsity player goes down to JV, does that JV game then count to his total for the spring season?
Yeah. So they only get 50 games, and so it does count against those 50.
When are you trying?
But a pitcher obviously will never get close to that. So it really benefits our bullpen.
When are you trying to set roles for players? Fall, spring? Is it fluid?
I would say by the early spring, we should have been putting them in roles, because the fall will fool you as a coach. A lot of times, guys come out, your best player has a bad fall, and your medium guy has the best fall, and you come out all excited, and then you come back January 10th for the first practice, and then you start to see the cream rise to the top to develop that lineup. I don't think any coach in the country will tell you that the lineup they write on opening day is the same lineup they write, in the last game of the year. We're just not that smart. So, a lot goes in to learning in January and February to develop not only what's going to be your starting lineup, but what are going to be the roles once you realize, okay, you know, my 10th guy's not, didn't win the job, but he's going to be my right-handed bat off the bench. Here's my left-handed bat off the bench. Here's my pinch runner, maybe even, you know, a pinch bunter, obviously somebody coming in for defense. So now you just went from keeping 9 guys, you know, engaged to maybe 13 guys engaged, you know, and that, you know, having serious roles, you know, to win games.
And that's a great talking point to your players, isn't it? That you've been doing this how long, and I've never had the same lineup to start the year as it was to finish the year.
Yes, and I use that this year. I use it most years. You know, February 1st is coming up. I'm like, I'm going to write the lineup today, and some of you are going to obviously be disappointed, but, you know, just understand I'm not that smart, and it probably won't be the same at the end of the year, so let's just keep working.
Did you feel like when the transfer portal came out that this is what it was going to look like?
For this season with the 2021 guys, so I knew the rule a couple years ago, and we exploited it a little bit last year. We brought Stephen Klein in, our first baseman, Andrew Carson, our setup closer guy. So we got a couple of those that just won the World Series with us. So we had known about it, but I didn't know it was going to become this big and this many guys, this many quality guys available. And with 20 rounds in the draft, you know, there's a lot of guys that would have just gone and moved on and played independent ball. And that was a big selling point is, you know, instead of going to play independent ball, you can do that anytime. Let's come here. Let's get a master's degree, try to win a World Series. And then, you know, if you don't get that shot to play, you know, the minor leagues, then you can go do independent ball later. But it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be a challenge because the roster is going to be more talented, deeper than I'm used to. So I guess I'll figure out what these Division I coaches go through with the amount of depth we may have this year.
What are some of your master's programs y'all offer?
So the entrepreneurship one is the one that has taken off the most, and a lot of guys are going into that. We are a business college, and our master's in business is great, but the entrepreneurship seems to be the fun one that everyone's been moving towards.
With Division I trying to hammer out kind of roster cap here, do you feel like that's going to help you all?
I'm hoping they'll be more available to us.
I mean, I'm hoping guys, for a firm 34. I just think it helps. Yeah. I think it helps everybody. I don't know if we'll get to a firm 34. They still have some NCAA still has some things to work through, but. Yeah. I hope we can just get to a firm 34. Some of the D1 guys will probably run me through the ringer for saying that, but I feel like it's the best thing for baseball. If start the year with 34, that's what you got, and I think it helps mid-major Division I's. I think it helps Division II, Division III, NEI. I think it would help college baseball as a whole if we just gave them a hard 34.
Right. Yeah, I think so. So hopefully this works out. There's a few more guys that we can we can get to come Division II because it is a really tough sell. These kids grow up and all they want Division I, and it doesn't matter, you know, what I say about the facilities and the academics and the championships. They still want to put on Twitter that they signed at a Division I school. So we have a lot to offer here, and hopefully this opens up, you know, some more doors for some of these high school kids to come our way.
And 74 MLB drafts, by the way.
Yeah,
I mean, we can go down the laundry list of any school in the country. They'd be hard pressed to put up 74 as their number of Major League Baseball drafts.
Now, and we are so proud of that. You know, the professional scouts have always looked after our program, and you know, we've always been at the top. You know, after Florida State, Miami, you know, Tampa's right there for you know, the last two decades for draft picks, and we're real proud of that. And 1 year we had the most in the state of Florida, fifth most in the whole country in 2010. So we make sure all the recruits know that.
Pusher in a phenomenal location in Florida. The Tampa St. Pete area is awesome.
It's a great area. Tampa's growing, and our school has grown with it. I don't know if you've been on campus, but it's amazing. Almost 11,000 students now right here on the river. One of the most beautiful campuses and backdrops in college baseball that you'll ever see.
Did you feel like you guys would beat the Phillies when you played them?
No. I actually, we were hanging with them. Everything's, you know, the game's going well. It's close. And I'm about to make all my changes because you want everyone to play in that game to get that experience. And Coach Jose Jimenez says, you know, can we let the starters just play one more inning? This thing's closer than we thought. And that's, sure enough, that's when Gio Alfonso hits the grand slam. And then we made the switches, you know, so everyone got in the game for the seventh, eighth, and ninth.
I'm sure the Phillies are like, what are we doing? We used to play the iCubs when I was at Iowa. We did it 2 years in a row, and then we almost beat them. And I'm sure the iCubs were like, well, this isn't good for anybody. It was good for us and good for our guys, yeah. But it was fun for our guys to go experience that.
It was a lot of fun for the players. I mean, it's their dream. It's all they've ever wanted to do since they were 5 years old is play in the big league. So to go there, to go in a major league clubhouse, you know, be treated like a big leaguer with a breakfast spread, a lunch, a dinner. They love it. It's a shame that we're not able to do it, that we haven't done it in a while. But and the student body love, you know, coming out and supporting us right here in Clearwater as well.
What do you feel like separates a good college player and then the ones that eventually get an opportunity to go on and play professionally?
It's all about the work ethic. You know, we grab a guy, you know, you'll have a guy you give more scholarship money to than another, and the guy with less scholarship money gets on campus, gets in that weight room, gets in those batting cages, does the extra that you don't realize this is a year-round training, and the extra in the summer, you know, a lot of guys, oh, I'm just going to go to work in the summer, and then the special guy going, no, I'm going to go play college baseball, you know, in the middle of nowhere to get my reps and elevate my game. So until you actually get them on campus and you're with them, that's what's going to separate, you know, the good ones from the best ones.
For me, you get a short amount of time to play. And I think it's hard for some kids to completely understand that piece, but you have a short window to play. You might as well use the whole 12 months to try to see how good you can be.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, this game has changed. It's a power game. And the weight room is everyone has personal strength coaches now. And all the colleges have them as well. And you have to take advantage of it year round. So when you're out, when they leave Tampa, they all should have, you know, be going to their strength coach, because no one's going to push you. You know, most people aren't capable of pushing themselves to a level like these strength coaches are able to do. And the game is better for it. Or, you know, these athletes are bigger, stronger, faster. You know, you're seeing it all the way up to the major leagues.
What will your first work? You said you're working out today for the first time. They're in the weight room. What will that first workout look like for them?
So they'll just get to know what our strength program's about. It. We hired a new strength coach this year, Roberto Mena, who played on our 06 and 07 championship team. So we're excited to welcome him back. And you know, obviously his heart's in baseball, so he'll take good care of my team. But you know, we had our first team meeting yesterday, and you know, the main part of the message was, you know, for the new guys to just, you know, for a month, just relax, watch how my returners do things, because that's what I'm going to demand out of you. That's what I'm going to expect out of you. Once again, we respect where everyone came from, great programs, but let's start to buy in and learn, you know, the Tampa way. And that first month of just watching instead of running your mouth is going to benefit you more. And after that first month, I told them, you may be, we don't name captains here, but you may be one of the main voices on the team as a brand new player, because that's available to every one of these guys. You don't have to be here for 3 years to be the voice of the team.
Would that be your advice to any incoming college players, to keep your mouth shut in the beginning?
It is. I did a talk to the fire department, to their newbies, and I just said, you know, with all due respect, I don't know any of you, but, you know, zip it for the first month and watch how things are done, and then figure out who you want to get in line with that's doing everything the right way, so you can be the best, get the best out of your talent.
Do you talk to the fire department a lot?
It was my first time. I know a lot of the firemen. It was my first time. A few people have gotten elevated in their roles. And Lelo's brother, Pepe Prado, is number three in charge right now in our county. So obviously with the connection with Lelo, he called me up and was able to go talk to the newbies. And one is my younger son, who just joined them as well. So it was a special day.
What else do you feel like you all do differently than maybe some other programs that aren't winning at the rate that you all win at?
I mean, you know, you're only a great coach if you bring in great players. You know, we do build things here. We build the family atmosphere. We do a lot of stuff. I believe in our practice plan. I believe in all that, but it really is about getting out on the streets and knowing what you're looking for, and trying to bring in the right players every year. And it's tough. You know, you lose great players every year, and we go out and we're like, okay, you know, we lost Drew Earhart a couple of years ago, and you're thinking, oh no, you know, he's with us for 6 years. How are we going to replace him? And when you're out there recruiting, you're trying to find someone equal or better to Drew to bring into this program to try to keep us, this program, on top. And that's what it's about. I mean, the only way I'm going to look smart and look like a great coach is if I get, you know, some talented kids around me. And, you know, once they get here, obviously there is a lot of work to be done in development. And that's another strength of ours, because all of us have played professionally and coached professionally. So, you know, we're able to bring the talent in, develop them to help us win these championships and ultimately move them to their goals of playing professional baseball.
Y'all play outside competition in the fall?
We'll do this year is going to be special. We're allowed three. We normally do the junior colleges, but this year is going to be special. Mike Piazza is going to bring Team Italy down, practice on our field for a week, and play us. Right now, we're going to play a two-game set on the weekend.
Oh, that's awesome. How'd you get connected with him?
One of our alums, Rob Panino, does a lot of work in Sicily and was got in touch with them about our interest. So what we're hoping to do is welcome them here this year. And then as they're going to try to do some new stuff with the stadium in Rome is what we're hoping. And we're going to hopefully take our players to Rome in 2027.
And we talked briefly. I mean, you had an unbelievable year on the mound, too. You had a 1.22 whip as a staff, and you fielded great, 976. I mean, is that about what you feel like you all can do every year defensively and then on the mound? I know that's special. Those are special numbers, but.
Yeah, I mean, last year, you know, those numbers are really special. It was a deep staff, a good bullpen. We have a new turf field. So this will be our third year playing on the turf, which helps the fielding percentage. But it also, to me, it builds confidence in the infielders. Even when we go on the road on a clay field, they build that confidence through our practice plan, not having those bad hops. And, you know, anybody will tell you, how do you win championships? It's pitching and defense. And as great as our offense was, and they scored 8-plus runs, and they were dominant and did it all World Series as well, you know, to win the 3-1 game, to win the close game, you better be built around pitching and defense.
Is your turf fast?
No. The outfield is bouncy and gets fast, but the infield plays true. I actually think it even slows it down just a little bit. State-of-the-art turf. We use Shaw, who's done all of Major League Baseball. So they came in, did a great job. We were named best renovated field in 2023. So they did a great job, and the infielders absolutely love it. I mean, they're not afraid. You see a ball coming off the bat 105 miles an hour on our Yakkertech system, and they're just putting their nose right in there, not afraid at all.
Do you like Yakkertech?
I do. The kids, you know, really like all the, you know, the Rapsodo, the Yakkertech, the different things that can shoot out some of the technology that they want to put a number with things these days. And I'm old school, but it's fun to learn a different way of teaching, and we definitely utilize all of the technology that's out there as well.
What are some things that stick out with the numbers? Because I'm old school as well, but I think some numbers are important, and with this generation, I think they do gravitate towards the numbers a little bit more. It's almost like video back in the day. They gravitate towards the numbers a lot. Yeah. Now, what are some of the most important metrics that you feel like are important for your program?
You know, I mean, you know, for the pitchers, obviously we've always, you know, known like the ball just kind of gets up on you. And now, you know, it's equated to spin rate. Some of the extension that they talk about and the different vertical breaks are great. But I like when you grab the old school box, strike zone box, and you can see the strengths and their weaknesses of where they're good at, you know, pitching in or pitching up, you know, things that we didn't teach back in the day. You may find, hey, this guy is better up in the zone. So that'll help a lot. I also like that same zone for my hitters so they can see kind of where their strengths are. Really helps us attack. So it's not just about, you know, launch angle and exit velo. You know, let's talk about the strike zone a lot. And this, it shows every pitch exactly where it's at, not where the hitter thinks it's at.
That helped then, obviously, early in the count with their approach as a hitter. Okay, this is your hot spot, your heat map or whatever. This is where your heat map is strongest. Is that eye-opening for some kids? Because I think a lot of kids think they're strong in areas that they're not actually offensively.
You're exactly right. And this, you know, it's like we can say it as coaches and, you know, they may believe us 70% of the time. And then now it's like, hey, no, this validates it. Like, okay, you know, you're swinging first pitch and, you know, you're hitting 200. You know, guys that are making contact, you know, should be hitting, you know, 500 in that count or whatever it may be. And here's why. And it's it's your plate discipline. You know, you're not swinging at quality pitches, or whatever count that you want to attack. It's great. It's just the percentages are there and they don't lie. And the more at bats and the more the year goes on, the more data we get, then we can just put it right in front of them to show them. I also like where you know, weekly we can show them their spray chart if they're starting to get pull happy, or whatever, you know, and now, oh yeah, well, you know, your batting average is starting to dip, but here's why. You know, you're pulling more, and look, the location the pitches aren't in, so that's not the reason we're getting out and around, or, you know, it just helps validate what we're teaching them.
With older hitters that you bring in, are you doing many mechanical adjustments with guys?
Very minimal. And even with the younger guys, me and Jose do all the hitting. We believe more in putting them through drills to get them where we want to be, as opposed to a bunch of information. We feel like the information overload clouds their brain, and now they're not, you know, doing what they do best of seeing the ball and hit it. So, you know, we'll try to not, the older guys, it's easier, you know, to not try to go, you know, reinventing the wheel with them. They've done it. They've been there, done that. But even the younger guys, you have to be careful. Sometimes we can overcoach and get in their way as well.
What are some of your first, like, go-to drills hitting-wise offensively?
So, you know, we like the high tee drill to shorten guys up. You know, so many guys are trying to lift the ball in the air, as we know. So if they're lifting too much, you know, we won't get on their butts. We'll just put that tee up a little bit higher and say, okay, now let's get that thing to the top back of that cage. We do a lot of stuff in to the opposite side of the field to try to stay in the big part of the opposite side of the field to keep their hands, you know, working inside the ball, letting that ball carry. Travel a little bit more so they're not jumping out to go get it. But, you know, we try to see what each guy, same thing, this is individual base, you know, what each guy's, you know, weakness is as the year goes on. You know, hitting, you know, you hit 400 one month and then the next month it's like, I'm only hitting, you know, 200 this month. What's going on? The ball was looking like a softball. Now it looks like a golf ball. And, you know, the mental part is so important. So we need to put them through drills that they can have success so we can try to build that into games.
You're back to the mental part. What are some things you took from Coach Revisa?
He's the best, but, you know, I always loved the toilet, and he would, you know, pardon my language, but don't shit in the box. So we, you know, step out, you know, flush it and let's move on to the next pitch. And, you know, I was able to do that. It was easily as a hitter, but if I made an error in the field, normally I was going to make two that day. I was not able to do that as a defender. I was so hard on myself because I expected myself to be perfect on defense. No one really expects you to be perfect on offense, but just learned a lot about, you know, each pitch and how do you reset yourself.
Did you ever get over the hump on that defensively? You and I were the same. It ate me up defensively.
Yeah, no. And as a coach, I don't either. You know, I was happy with our fielding percentage this year for sure. But that, you know, that's the one thing that gets me the most is the defensive mistakes. And obviously, you're going to make errors. You're not going to have 1,000 fielding percentage. We all know that. But But, you know, we work hard to try to be perfect on defense.
How many of your incoming infielders need work on their prep steps?
I mean, pretty much a lot of them are late early on with a false jump and things. So that's day one. You know, we go right into getting ready.
How early do you want them to go?
I always snap my finger like this is contact. So I want you ready before you hear that. You know, not too early where you become, you know, flat-footed, but we need to be ready before that. And we talk about that with secondary leads as well. You know, you know some of these base runners and infielders, they get ready, then it's contact, and now they're getting ready again to go to react. They need to be ready to react, whether it's defensively or base running, right before that snap.
You said the parents and even the girlfriends are really involved. Do you feel like that helps your players transition to your level and being at your place?
Yeah, because you know their parents have been part of it, and they don't talk to me. I involve them in the things that are important to them. You know, we have a team dinner, and they're able to hang out with their kids at the team dinner. They're not going to go to coach and say, hey, why is my kid hitting ninth or why is he not playing? They know the way we run it. We're going to treat you guys just like you're part of the family, whether your kid's our best player or our 30th player on the roster. You know, obviously they may think of me up and down like that, but I really do. I want to treat them all the same. And I try to do the same. And, you know, we leave a game and, you know, a lot of them, it's a handshake. It's a hug. It's very personal around here. And they know that they're all welcome anything we do with their kids.
Do you talk to them very long post game?
My players?
Yep.
No, I do not. I try to keep it brief. I try to go with positives and negatives and then get them on their way. But now with the turf field, I've changed my whole philosophy of post game speeches. So now it takes us 7 minutes to redo the mound with a little bit of sand and gravel and everything. So now they get done. 7 minutes later, we're getting it up and saying goodbye and heading to their post game meal. And then the next morning, if we have the game, that's when I'll go over all the positives and negatives of what we did and let's clean this up today or you know whatever we might need to do to get ready for that next game.
What are some things that you feel like are important that, okay, we did this well, we didn't do this well? What are some things that you feel like are important in game?
So, I mean, for the pitchers, you know, it's getting the first hitter out of every inning. So I'll give them that number every time. Hey, we got them out, you know, 6 of 9. It's obviously limiting the walks. And then on the hitter side, we talk a lot about our situational hitting and, where we may have done great. Sometimes the score is lopsided, but we were, you know, 3 of 8 in situational hitting. Well, you know, all we talk about is staying even keel and playing that last game the same. Well, we would not have won the last game of the year with that 3 of 8 situational hitting. So we got away with it today. Maybe we played a weaker team, whatever, but we need to clean that up. So we'll talk a lot about situational hitting the things that they need to do. Limiting strikeouts is important on the offensive side, putting balls in play. This is college baseball. And any ball in play is a dangerous baseball. So limit the strikeouts.
Do you do much with two-strike approach?
I try to not. I try to leave them on their own. Talk a lot about just, you know, keeping the head down. If numbers start getting inflated and somebody's striking out more than 20% of the time, you know, and we need to, you know, discuss choking up or spreading out a little bit or getting a little closer to the plate, we'll start to go that way. But we'll try to not clone like 1-2-strike idea, let them still, you know, stay comfortable. But if we see it, you know, those numbers, especially today, some people think it's acceptable and for us, it's not. So we'll,
that's your cutoff is 20%.
Yeah. That's what we
love it.
We start to get upset when we start to see that.
Love it.
And obviously, you know, a power hitter, 3-4 hitter might be a little
feast or famine guy.
Yeah. It might be a little different, but. Yeah, we even those guys, you know, we had one of our most powerful guys, and we had to go there. We had to go more to get a little closer, a little spread out. His home run numbers went up. Everything went up.
Hey, with having turf, how good of quality of life do you all have? 7 minutes and you're done.
It's the best.
I never got to coach on turf. It's unbelievable, yeah. Isn't it?
It's unbelievable. Division II baseball, we are the grounds crew. So they mow the grass for us. We water the clay every day. We line the field. And if you want to keep, I'm an infielder. So I expect my infielders to get in front of the ball. So practice is done at 5. And here, you know, we are as coaches, players are gone off to the weight room, whatever. And we're just out there for 30 more minutes soaking our clay. So by the next, it's perfect for the next day. And then game day on a Friday, forget it. You're out there 9 o'clock till 11, lining it, watering it, lunch, come back, water it. And this is the life of a Division II coach, because we don't have, you know, grounds crew doing everything for us. So now at the turf, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work in the office on what we should be working on with getting our players, you know, prepared for the game instead of working on a field.
You lift post practice?
Yes. Yeah, we try to do everything post practice. You know, I like the guys.
I agree with that. I know everybody has their different. I think it should be after practice. I think just bunch it together, practice, yeah. Lift. That way they've got their rest and recovery time, class time, and I think you should bunch it together.
Yeah, I mean, time management skills are the toughest thing for these kids to do. So if I start bringing them in. Split groups. Okay, here we go. We're going to lift in the morning at 6 a.m. and then I'll see you at 2:30 to 5 for practice. Now they got this gap in between. They're supposed to go to class. Do they go home to take a nap? I get them in there. I'm worried about their time. I'm not just gonna be out there and take all their time up. You know, I want to get them in there, get them out of there, get them the weight room, and let them go. Have their personal time, because their social life's important as well.
Do you have a fail forward moment? Do you have something you thought was going to set you back, but looking back now, it helped you move forward?
Ooh.
Could be professional, could be personal. Everybody's got to answer this one.
Yeah. Setback moment.
It's a fail forward. So
fail forward moment. Let's just go. So the World Series. You know, when you take a job at Tampa, you're expected to win World Series, and got the job in 2000. Took me all the way to 06 to get my first one. And just, you know, the pressure I was putting on myself to get that first one. And there's some videos of me. I'm drinking the water bottle, you know, I don't know, maybe a dozen times a minute. So just, you know, that getting over the hump, that first one, we were down to our last out. In the ninth inning with our 8-hole hitter up at the plate, 2 outs, down one, and we just start, here we come, and we get a hit, 2-out hit, tie it, and then we end up winning in extras, and that kind of, you know, got us over the hump. I remember looking up in the suite, and I'm looking at the president and my boss. I'm like, how am I going to explain second place again to these guys? But we end up coming back and getting things done. So that really kind of got me over the hump.
There is a lot of luck involved with winning it, though, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, it's getting in the right bracket. You know, you obviously, you have to play well, but, you know, you get in the right bracket, and how your pitchers happen to line up with a certain team could make a difference. You know, my first time going there with a loaded team, you know, we end up losing to Southern Illinois of Edwardsville. And, you know, we play them, you know, we play them in a 5-game series. We're going to win probably 5 times, at 4 if not. But they had one arm, David Crothers, end up pitching the big leagues. I'll never forget it. And we had no chance, and they ended up beating us. So, you know, you need a little bit of luck and how the bracket falls. And maybe there's a left-handed heavy lineup, and you happen to face them in the second game instead of the first, and you get the right arm against them. So there's a lot of things that go into this game, as we know. Like to win a long tournament like that.
Do you have any go-to morning or evening routines that you feel like help you?
No, it's just about being prepared with the coaching staff. So they get the video to the players. Really, I kind of stay out of their way. I mean,
about you personally? You work out at all?
I need to, you see, but, no, just really just
maybe
around
I did
that.
It wrong. Maybe I shouldn't have done anything. Just
no, I need to get back in the gym. Because we had fun as a coaching staff in the gym, and now Mena's our strength coach. He's going to make me. He says I've put on too much weight. But no, for me, it's about getting with the coaches, and just they've done all the work. They're relaying it to me, and then it's coming from me to the players a lot of the time. So it's just being organized with them, making sure I understand exactly why they came up with, you know, of why we're going to shift a guy or why we're going to attack this certain hitter in, and I'll, you know, or which hitter are we going to intentionally walk anytime the game's online? Just being prepared. It's all about being prepared. I do not like to make too many crazy decisions in game emotionally. And by being prepared in the morning with my coaches, you know, me and Sam, you know, with the pitching, we already know here's what we're doing: up three, down three, up five, you know, whatever. So we're not making the wrong moves for our club to win that whole tournament.
How long do those meetings take?
Very brief. Within 30 minutes, we're done with all of us. And normally we'll do all three of us because Jose, even though he's getting ready on how to align the defense and getting ready for our hitters, you know, Sam's just watching, you know, the opposing hitters and how they're going to attack them. All of a sudden, Jose's like, look at this spray chart versus how you're going to attack them. So between those two guys going through their charts and then it's there's no wasted time. Time management is really good around here. I mean, our practice plan, 2 hours and 15 minutes each day, and then they head off to the weight room. Same with our coaches. You know, we're not doing Monday morning meetings all the time. It's just let's get this game plan ready for the weekend, and then Saturday morning we'll talk about it again after batting practice. You know, while we're waiting on the other team to hit.
That's a benefit of you guys being around each other that long too, though.
Yeah, we really trust each other. These guys know what I'm going to do before I even do it. You know, Jose's over in the first base box. Before I even put the sign on, he's telling the base runner at first, hit and run's coming here. These guys, you know, we know each other. We've been around each other a lot, and that does help. And you have to trust your coaches. And that's they know that I treat them just like, you know, I feel like we have three head coaches on this staff. And I treat them just, you know, as important. And I'll ask them, hey, you know, you want to play small ball this inning before it even happens, you know? You want to, you know, not play small ball, play for the big inning, you know, I'll involve them in a lot of decisions that sometimes you just see, you know, when I'm watching on TV and you just see the head coach of Division I by himself doing everything. And maybe that's how it's done. But, you know, we're going to make a decision with the three of us. So we make the best decision for the university.
Hit and run's a lost art. How are you teaching approach on hit and run?
So, you know, it's everyone that it's hit the ball hard on the ground, wherever it's pitched. And you see so many foul balls hit on hit and runs because you're trying to guide the ball. And now it just became, now I just put you in a negative count. So, you know, it's, they all think they're good enough to hit it to the opposite infielder, and that's all great and everything. But a lot of times when you try to guide it that way, it's a foul ball and now it's a negative count. And now, you know, now it just, you know, it's supposed to be an offensive play. If I wanted to do that, you know, we can just put the bunt on. So, we're pretty good at it. We do rely on the hit and run a lot. We do still bunt. We still a lot of Joe Maddon plays, we call it, with the first and third safety squeeze. Love that play, and I'm still old school suicide squeeze guy. So
I am too. Love it. What would you like to see out of Division II going forward?
You know, it's as we lose so many of these guys to Division I, it's just, I felt like the talent was starting to fall down a little bit with so many of the guys transfer from D1 to D1. So, you know, maybe getting us a little bit more scholarship money so we can put a more attractive offer for the parents could help us to get a few of these elite kids to stay in town instead of, you know, going to a mid-level Division I. It's like, how are we going to compete, you know, in the recruiting world with these guys, but, you know, with a lot more scholarship money than us. And I get it. The kids want Division I. I get it. But if we had a little bit more money to throw their way, I mean, 9 scholarships just doesn't seem right when You need so many starters. Basketball has more than us. They need five starters. Why do they get 12 and a half scholarships? We get nine, but you know, that's it. Just try to get a little edge on that recruiting.
What are some final thoughts before I let you go?
Just, you know, as the game people say is changing, and it is, and the kids are outstanding. And if you just communicate with each and every one of them, in a different way, you know, you'll get the most out of your kids. And they do still like discipline, so you can still yell, you can still do the things that we did old school, but just be aware of all your players. You know, put a hand on them once a week if you can, so they know you care. You know, sometimes we get away from your pitchers, you never talk to them, so you know, putting a hand on them and just letting them know that you care, because they're some of them are, you know, going through things that, you know, that are a little bit different with anxiety and depression and things. So be there for them. If they're coming in my office and they're communicating with me, that means they're feeling comfortable with me. I've done my job.
Awesome. Thanks for your time, Joe. I'm glad we finally got connected. So I'm glad the house is coming along for you. So I appreciate it.
All right, Ryan. Thank you.
Congrats again to Coach Urso and Spartan Nation on their sixth national championship. With NCAA granting COVID seniors another year for Division II players, they're lined up to have another great season. Thanks again to Jim Richardson, John Litchfield, Zach Hale, Matt West, and Antonio Walker in the ABCA office for all the help on the podcast. Feel free to reach out to me via email, rbrownlee@abca.org, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at @coachb_ABCA, or direct message me via the MyABCA app. This is Ryan Brownlee signing off for the American Baseball Coaches Association. Thanks, and leave it better for those behind you.
Wait for another.